Welcome to another ABC Radio National podcast. For more information, go to abc.net.au/rn.
Think of some current failures. The Rabbitohs football team with barely a win all season. Brendan Nelson with popularity figures so low they're almost subterranean. British Prime Minister Gordon Brown losing elections at a scale unknown since the time of Cromwell. But is their tribulation more than it seems? Are they all really being prepared for a glorious future, a time of success that only adversity can set up? Mark Dodson is director of the Centre for Technology and Innovation in Queensland, and he should know. He attended the same college in London as I did. Mark.
Recent visitors to London will, I hope, have taken the opportunity to walk across the Millennium Bridge, linking the Tate Gallery and St Paul's Cathedral, the first footbridge to be built across the River Thames for more than 100 years. It is an extraordinary engineering, architectural and sculptural achievement, a design of such beauty it is described as a blade of light across the river. The bridge opened on the 10th of June 2000, when between 80 and 100,000 people walked across it. When large groups of people were crossing, however, it started wobbling alarmingly and quickly gained notoriety as the Wobbly Bridge. It was closed after 2 days, causing immense embarrassment to all concerned. After an intensive international effort, the cause was found and rectified. The problem, apparently, was the way men tend to walk with splayed feet, like ducks. When many walk in unison, unusual lateral excitation occurs. Had it been a women-only bridge, there would have been no problem. As a result of this debacle, new knowledge about bridge design was developed, and future projects will allow large numbers of men to waddle happily together over rivers. Bridge designers always learn from failure. Many will be familiar with the grainy film of the spectacularly violent swaying and collapse of the Tacoma Narrows Bridge in 1940, which provided hugely important lessons for subsequent bridge design. Bridges are illustrative of the way all progress in science, engineering and business is built upon failure. Successful individuals and firms fail all the time. As Humphrey Davy, the famous 18th century chemist, inventor and president of the Royal Society said, "The most important of my discoveries has been suggested to me by my failures." And as Henry Ford put it, failure is only the opportunity to begin again more intelligently. I want to argue that failure doesn't get the credit it deserves. If you want to understand success, you must appreciate the ubiquity of failure, and if you're not regularly failing, you're not trying hard enough. We continually witness failures in science, technology and business. In science, think of cold fusion. One of Australia's first major post-war scientific investments, Mark Oliphant's homopolar generator at the ANU, conspicuously failed to deliver what was promised. This project cost £1.25 million, a huge proportion of the national science budget at the time, so it could be said that big science in Australia began with a big disappointment. The list of technological failures is endless, and not just the spectacular ones like the Challenger or Chernobyl. Many will be familiar with the product called WD-40, used to ease rusted fastenings or remove moisture from engines. Some might know that WD stands for water displacement, but the 40? It was actually the 40th attempt to develop the product. The previous 39 failed. Businesses continually fail, even as they are being lauded for being innovative. Think of Enron or dot-com bubble companies. The creators of many popular products have faded into oblivion. Asked to name which company developed the microwave oven, the reply might be Panasonic or Samsung. It was, in fact, three companies that subsequently disappeared, Tappan, Amana and Litton. Who developed the ballpoint pen? Bic? No. Reynolds and Eversharp. The 35mm camera? Canon? Nikon? No. Contracts and Exacta, firms no one has ever heard of. Failure lurks around every success story. Many new ideas or innovations fail because of the sheer complexity of the science or technology or businesses or markets they emerge from. This is economist Paul Ormerod's explanation in his book Why Most Things Fail. He convincingly argues companies continually fail, and 10% of all companies in America disappear each year, because they can never deal completely with the complexity of the real world. There is also the matter of the uncertainty and unpredictability of the future. Consider why Thomas Watson, chairman of IBM, said in 1943, "I think there's a world market for maybe 5 computers. Or Ken Olson, president and founder of Digital Equipment Corp, said in 1977, "There is no reason anyone would want a computer in their home." no one ever knows what is around the corner. The eminent US scientist Linus Pauling said the best way to have a good idea is to have lots of ideas. Empirical evidence supports this. Returns to ideas are highly skewed. There is what physicists and economists call a power law distribution. Only a few academic papers, patents, products, and company startups are successes. The majority of returns come from 10% of innovative investments. In some areas, it's even more skewed. At any one time, there may be up to 8,000 potential new drugs being researched around the world. How many of these will make it to market? Maybe one or two. The best explanation for the persistent failure of economic and technological ideas was probably provided by Joseph Schumpeter, a brilliant Harvard economist, a man who failed during his time as Austrian finance minister and as a banker, a man whose personal failings included turning a petty squabble with a librarian into a sword duel, and whose love life was so complicated he was once married to two women simultaneously. Schumpeter argued that innovation is characterized by creative destruction. Failure is inevitable, part of the process of economic development. You can't have creation without destruction, innovation without failure. What does this mean for us as individuals immersed in this sea of failure? Most importantly, it entails personal recognition that failure is a valuable opportunity to learn, reflect, and develop the strengths of our characters. We can approach it as positively as Edison, who said, "I have never failed, I've just found 10,000 ways that won't work." We can even use it as a badge of honour, as many American entrepreneurs have discovered in their dealings with venture capitalists, who prefer backing those who have previously failed, learn their lessons, and have the courage to try again. We can even celebrate it. As Robert Kennedy said, "Only those who dare to fail greatly can ever achieve greatly." No one sets out to fail, but we're all going to fail a lot more than we succeed, so we'd better accept it and make the most of it as a great opportunity for learning and introspection and keeping our egos in check. It also points to the value of perseverance. I remember a BBC interviewer asking a fan of the Birmingham City Soccer Club what he thought shortly after his team had lost yet another game. This club was formed in 1875 and has only won one minor trophy in its entire history in 1963. His memorably glum quote was, "Well, you lose some, you draw some." Yet he continued to support them, his team continues to try, its legion of fans remain ever optimistic, perhaps hanging on to Winston Churchill's dictum, "Success consists of going from failure to failure without loss of enthusiasm." Of course, there is a personal price to pay for failure. Lucky indeed is the person whose mistakes don't have them waking up in the middle of the night in a cold sweat thinking, "Why did I do that?" Pushing a neck out can be a risky career move. As Machiavelli says in The Prince, "There is nothing more difficult to plan nor more dangerous to manage than the creation of a new order of things." Whenever his enemies have the ability to attack the innovator, they do so with the passion of partisans, while the others defend him sluggishly, so that the innovator and his party alike are vulnerable. There remains much truth in the old saying that success has many parents and failure is an orphan. What does the ubiquity of failure mean for firms? It has been known for a long time that continually successful companies accept the inevitability of failure, tolerate it, and always encourage staff to try out new ideas. In the 1920s, a young manager at Ford made a large investment that went horribly wrong. With great trepidation, he went into the office of the fearsome Henry Ford to hand in his resignation letter. Ford ripped it up, saying he wasn't going to have someone who had learned such an expensive lesson go and work for a competitor. In 1948, William McKnight, chairman of the 3M Corporation, said about his staff, "Mistakes will be made. Management that is destructively critical when mistakes are made kills initiative. And it's essential we have many people with initiative if we are to continue to grow." This culture of accepting failure as an inevitable feature of creativity and initiative is one of the reasons why 3M has been one of history's most innovative companies. Firms might also value failure inasmuch as you can never really know what is going to be valuable. The Apple Newton, an early personal digital assistant, is a notorious product failure. It cost more than a computer, and one memorable technical review said it was so big and heavy it could only be carried around by kangaroos. Its failure cost the CEO his job. Yet move on 10 years and we find its operating system in the iPod and several Newton-like features in the iPhone. Similarly with science, one simply never knows when particular pieces of knowledge are going to be valuable, and a failed experiment may be a hugely important guide to future successful ones. Success is often transitory. lauded breakthroughs today may be discounted tomorrow. Today's derided findings may become tomorrow's truths. Failure is, of course, central to scientific method. The null hypothesis is an essential part of trial and error inquiry and the advancement of knowledge. Students of the philosophy of science will be aware of the importance of the falsification of theory and the overthrow of scientific paradigms. All that is solid melts into air, to paraphrase Marx. Yet the issue of failure in science is critically important in an era of financial accountability, external fundraising pressures, and research performance metrics. Aversion to risk is an increasing feature of the career structures of scientists and the institutions that employ them all around the world. In August last year, the Chinese government actually began to legislate to tolerate scientific failure and allow scientists to report failures without blotting their records. A member of the National People's Congress pointed out to fellow legislators that failures were themselves valuable, and the vice president of the Chinese Academy of Sciences said, "It's difficult to make achievements in independent innovation if the scientific research departments and scientists don't tolerate failure." How do we in Australia encourage people to try harder and be more adventurous without the fear of the stigma of failure? We can do a number of simple things. On the academic side, our research councils could significantly increase the weighting awarded to novel and imaginative methodologies and research applications. Our universities could give new employees and research centres longer to prove themselves. We could teach university courses on failure. Scientists have much to learn from the way Huang Wu-suk conducted his fraudulent stem cell research and managed to get it published in Science. Henry Petrosky has demonstrated through his numerous influential books on engineering that engineers learn extensively from failure. Indeed, Penn State University in the USA offers an engineering course called Failure 101. Businesses would be more adventurous if they put a greater premium on investments creating options for the future, and would be much more innovative if they adopted the view that failure is going to happen. So fail as quickly and as cheaply as you can, learn and move on. And business schools would be much more relevant if they taught their students more cases of failure rather than their preoccupation with the latest stock market star. Perhaps the most important question is how tolerant are we generally of failure in Australian society? If our sporting teams are anything to go by, we're in big trouble. How often are we confronted by the sour and surly demeanour of the runners-up, or shudder at the image of the ugly parent at children's sporting events? Occasionally, our winning-at-all-costs mentality moves decisions towards the dangerously unethical. Let's teach our children to respect those that try and fail, inform them why so many of the eminent people I've quoted think failure is important, and explain to them why George Bernard Shaw said a life spent making mistakes is not only more honourable but more useful than a life doing nothing. Let's teach them early about the value of failing and mentor them on how to deal with our deepest fear of all, public failure. The other side of failure is that celebrating our occasional successes is hugely important. When you win, party like mad. To succeed, we must try and avoid replicating mistakes, but we must never stop adopting new approaches and trying new things. We might learn from that most enlightened of Victorian thinkers, Samuel Smiles. We learn wisdom from failure much more than success. We often discover what we'll do by finding out what we'll not do, and probably he who never made a mistake never made a discovery. We can be forgiven for failing. To have never tried for fear of failing is unforgivable.
So go for it, which is why my role model for swimming has always been the eel. Remember him in the Olympics? Glorious last. Mark Dodson is a professor of innovation at the University of Queensland. Next week, Craig Cormick examines the curious and substantial change in our attitudes to GM crops. I'm Robin Williams.
You've been listening to another ABC Radio National podcast. ABC Radio National, on air and online, with many of our programs available as podcasts or MP3 downloads. All the details at abc.net.au/rn/podcast.